Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookshow. Then go over to morbidlybeautiful.com as we are now part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcasting Network.
Oh, it's alive. It's alive. It's alive.
No boat too.
Everybody here dies by dawn.
Dead by dawn.
Welcome to the Spook Show.
Spook Show.
Hello, and welcome back to the All American Spook Show. I'm Josh, and I'm joined here with Tiana.
Hey.
And the Professor Smoke.
Yep.
Will and Donnie, once again, couldn't be here. They're on a little bit of a streak. Donnie's starting to copy Will here. He's just vanished on us. He must have opened the lament configuration and fell into hell world or something. But at some point, he'll be back. He's just kind of knee-deep doing this, that, and the other thing. So he'll be back soon enough. But boy, are they the lucky ones. They didn't. And the messed up thing is, as this has happened before, Donnie is the one that picked this movie. But this was more of like a favor to us all. Like, all right, let's just watch another one of these so we can get closer to being done with these things. And what am I talking about? That's the Hellraiser franchise. And this is, what is this, part 8? Right?
Yep,
I think.
Part 8.
Yeah. Hellraiser Hellworld from 2005.
It was Hellraiser 8 Hellworld, I guess, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the 8th one. God. I mean, we always say that, you know, since at least, what, the 4th one, we'd be like, God almighty, these things just, you know, they just won't go away. But, You know, but I'll speak for myself here right out the gate, and we'll get into it. I felt that this one was more watchable than the last 3 or 4 that we've watched, but I'll leave that there for now. We'll get into it. But before we do, we want to remind you to go visit aaspookshow.com. We call that the center of the Spook Show universe. From there, you can go listen to our 210 or so previous episodes of the podcast. The whole podcast archive is findable there on the website. Also, you can find a link to our YouTube channel from there, where every month over on our YouTube channel, we have 3 series that kind of go in and out. We've got Grindhouse Gutter, Video Vortex, and we've got Hammer Horror in Order. So those gets lots of love, and we encourage you to go check those out. Those are a lot of fun to do. So it's a little different from the podcast, more short form videos that we do. We have a lot of fun with those. So go check them out on our YouTube. Also from there, you can find our Patreon, patreon.com/AASpookShow. And over there, every month, you get a video minisode, including the Library of the Professor, where he picks something from his vast library, and we have a little bit of fun with that. And then also every month, something we have a little less fun with, Crapster Peace Theater, where every month we put up a poll of 4 or 5 of the steamiest turds we can think of. You, the listeners and viewers, vote on that, and then the following month, we watch it. We're subjected to it, and then we talk about it. But you can only listen to that by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/AASpookShow. So I guess without any further buildup, we'll go ahead and toss the trailer for Hellraiser Hellworld.
I'm going to a real-life secret Hellworld park.
Hellraisers, let's play!
Welcome, Hellraisers. Invitations. That's what I'm talking about.
I wouldn't touch that.
Is it just a game now?
Justine! It's not real!
If you need anything, just scream.
Welcome to hell.
All right, so that's the trailer for that. Now, before we get into our, you know, history with it, initial thoughts and all that type of stuff, there is one announcement that we wanted to make here towards the top of the show, and that is what our big summer event's going to be. If you've been a listener of the Spook Show for a while, you know that every summer we pick kind of a subject and we have a big summer event. So in the past, we've done the Summer of the Wolf, where we did nothing but werewolf movies all summer. We did Camp Spook Show, where it was just summer camp horror movies and cult movies, and just summer camp had to have something to do with it, right? Then we did the Spook Show Summer Disaster, which was last year, where, you know, kind of self-explanatory. It was all disaster movies, Godzilla, you know, zombie apocalypse, end of the world type stuff, disasters. So this summer, we've decided that we're going to go a little bit suckier. And by that, I mean, we're going to call it the Spook Show Sucky Summer. And what does that mean? Well, I mean, if you know anything about horror, you could probably put two and two together what suck means in horror. That's right. We're going to be talking about vampire movies. So all summer long, starting on what is Memorial Day, May 27th, Memorial Day here in the United States, with episode 214, we're going to kick off the Spook Show Sucky Summer with Life Force. So it's going to be a cannon fodder that's actually going to get this thing kicked off. So I think this is going to be a lot of fun. And this will cross over into Video Vortex and Grindhouse Gutter over on our YouTube series. Now, it can't cross over into Hammer Horror in Order because, you know, that literally by definition, we're watching those in kind of chronological order in which they came out. So unless it just so happens to be a vampire movie that Hammer put out that fell in order, which I believe we've looked ahead and it won't fall that way. Like, we won't do another vampire Hammer flick until like later this year. So we're not lucky enough to have it actually fall during this summer, but we have done a couple of vampire movies already on Hammer Horror in Order. So if you want to go back and check the playlist out there on the YouTube channel, you'll see those like Dracula and I think Brides of Dracula, right? So, and there's tons more of those to come later on down the line. They just won't be part of the Sucky Summer. So yeah. What do you think, Smoke?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think, you know, we already know some of the movies that we're picking. We're not announcing those yet. So I'm looking forward to some of those that we got on the books already. And looking forward to seeing what other movies get picked. You know, what the wheel, I think we're going to have some on a wheel, right?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Yeah, there's some wheel choices. And we're also going to have our regular rotation. There'll be some Cult Corner. There'll be some Cannon Fodder. Like I mentioned, there'll be Video Vortex, Grindhouse Gutter over on the YouTube channel. So it's going to cross all over everything we do. So there'll be tons by the end of the summer. Tons of vampire movies will be viewed and talked about. And I think it'll wrap up sometime around mid-August, I believe. So starting Memorial Day and into mid-August, the Spook Show Sucky Summer coming your way. So we wanted to go ahead and throw that out of the way because this Wednesday you've got the latest, Grindhouse Gutter that comes out. And we kind of had to tease what we're going to be doing. You know, we actually, you know, kind of lift the curtain. We've recorded that already. So we had to kind of tease what we're going to be doing in June for the Grindhouse Gutter. So if you go check out Grindhouse Gutter, which comes out this Wednesday on the YouTube channel, you'll hear us talk about this a little bit more and tease what's coming next for Grindhouse Gutter in June, which has something to do with the Sucky Summer. So another big title that Smoke chose for Grindhouse Gutter, something to look forward to. So we encourage you to go check those out. So back to, as much as we don't want to talk about it, back to Hellraiser. Is this the first time for you guys watching this one?
For me, yes.
Yeah.
Same here. So we're all new to this world. So we got no history to speak of here. And I have a feeling it's probably going to kind of be that way for the next couple, right? Because I think there's at least two more without looking at the full list. And then that new one that came out a couple years ago, right?
I've
seen all three of those.
Yeah, Tiana's seen all of the newer. All okay. The ones after this, I've seen one of them, I believe, right?
Yeah, because, okay, I'm looking at it now. I've got it pulled up. There's three more. Thank God. There's only three more. Hopefully there won't be any more by the time we fucking finish this thing up. But God knows, since we're about to go into the Sucky Summer, it might prolong this enough to where there's another one that will come out, you know, at the end of the year or next year or something like that. And that's about right. But this was part eight. There's part nine, Hellraiser Revelations, which came out in 2011. Then there's part 10, which is Hellraiser Judgment, which came out just, 6 years ago in 2018. And then there's Hellraiser, which came out 2 years ago in 2022. That was, not that these things really have much continuity going for them, but that one is a complete reboot as far as what's going on there, right? So I think that one will be more interesting than a lot of these, you know, but that we've watched lately and probably these next couple of, what'd you call it, Tiana? The Great Value Pinhead that's coming.
He's next.
Because unfortunately, this one that we just watched, Hellraiser Hellworld, is the last time Doug Bradley played Pinhead. We say goodbye, unfortunately, to Doug Bradley after this one. So there's nowhere to go but down, I would imagine. And I ain't saying a lot, but but I feel that this one at least went out on a better note. It's not great. We'll get into that with our ratings and stuff. But I think it went out on a slightly better note than the last couple have. We'll see what y'all think about that. It'll be interesting, too, one of these days to get I know Will probably never watched this. He's like a couple of these damn movies behind anyways. He's the lucky one. But maybe one day we'll get Donnie's two cents on it and see what see what he has to say about it. But this one, actually, remember when we talked about Hellraiser Deader, a handful of episodes back when we did that one fairly more recently, these two movies with Hellraiser Hellworld were made at the same time. There was some kind of deal, and we talked about that in the episode, but there was some kind of deal they had at the time to make these things in Romania. So they basically just kind of shot those two films back to back or alongside one another there in, like, say, from October to December of 2002 to save cost. But I do feel, though, considering now that you know that, you do get a vastly different movie here from that last one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't feel anything like that one. And remember, we kept making the joke, like, the last few movies felt like an episode of CSI, right? Like, this one didn't feel like that to me.
No, that definitely did. Like you mentioned, it's at least better than those last few we watched.
Yeah, either that or the bar has been lowered so much that we're just like, oh my God, something even a small amount of decent, I'll take it. You know, it's one or the other. I don't know.
I think it's Lance Henriksen helps it out.
Yeah, absolutely. It does.
Nice boost.
And Superman, right? We get Henry Cavill in this one.
That's right.
He's goofy as hell in
that. Oh, yeah. Well, he's playing that early 2000s frat boy type of bullshit, right? And this was one of his, this wasn't like his first movie, but it's one of his first like three or four roles, I believe, when I looked it up. Like, he had been in some TV, like, I think some TV movies and some episodes of television shows, but I just think, like, this came out in 2005, but it was actually, you know, filmed like 2002 into 2003, right? He's only less than 10 years removed from becoming Superman and Man of Steel when you're watching this movie, which is crazy. But
well, that was the last thing that even crossed his mind when he was making a Hellraiser Hellworld.
Oh yeah,
that he would be somewhat, you know, years down the road.
And once again, joining a long line of you know, actors that made it bigger later on that actually had some of their early, if not one of their first roles in a horror movie, right? We can just add him to the list.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of the spotlights we talked about. That's one for the books down the road somewhere we needed to.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, we've talked about it a couple of times. We need to get around to that one. That's one of those evergreen topics that I think would be interesting for sure. He was in Vendetta in 2001. He had a role in The Count of Monte Cristo in 2002. Then he was in a TV movie, TV series, another movie called I Captured the Castle in 2003, one episode of Midsummer Murders TV series, and then Hellraiser Hellworld. That's what he had leading into this. And honestly, I mean, knowing when they filmed this, this might be one of the first two or three things he did, because those other things came out, you know, prior to this, but were probably, you know, filming wise, you get what I'm saying? So this might be one of his first two or three projects that he ever worked on. But it wasn't until obviously Man of Steel, you know, that shot him to the moon. But he was in that, he was in 38 episodes of that series, The Tudors, that I think came on Showtime or something back then.
I never saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that must have been where he kind of, you know, became a face, and then Man of Steel and then off to the races. But yeah, at least you got that. And like you said, Lance Henriksen, right? I mean, dude's been in tons of stuff. He like you said, he's really one of the big reasons why this, I think, is as entertaining as it is. But and we'll get into more of like what the hell's going on in this movie. But I think you get a little bit of that, you know. Well, before I say what I'm about to say, we are a spoiler-filled podcast. So if for whatever reason you want to watch Hellraiser Hellworld and you haven't to this point, just know that we're about to spoil the hell out of it. So fair warning, pause this now, go check it out if you want to. Come back and listen to the rest of this conversation about it. But I think you get another one of these, though, with him where it's like, is he Pinhead? Is he real? Is he not? Right? Like, you kind of question, yeah, you know, like in so many movies that led up to this, it's like you're questioning reality, right?
Yeah, this one, it definitely leans into the meta horror, right?
Which I think, you know, and honestly, you know, like one of the thoughts that came to my mind when I'm sitting here watching it is like, this didn't feel like, you know, like the last few felt like an episode of NCIS or CSI or whatever the hell's on CBS these days. It felt more like a slasher movie to me.
Yeah.
And they, I guess everybody in this part of the Hellraiser world we're in now knows about Hellraiser or knows of Hellraiser, you know, like 10 Cenobites, and or at least that they're a myth or not, maybe not a myth, but they're known, you know.
Yeah, so. It's a story. I guess they all view it like it's a video game, right? So I guess they would look at it like it's this pop, it's this popular, maybe not video game necessarily. They kind of frame it like it's a PC game kind of thing, but like one of those massive online player games or whatever.
Yeah.
So I guess the mythology of Pinhead, Leviathan, because there's a lot of terms they throw out there, right? Leviathan, Pinhead, or the Cenobites, I think that's thrown out there at some point. And, you know, some of the stuff that we've learned watching this franchise, they throw those terms out at you in this movie. And of course the lament configuration is a big part of it and everything, but I'll give them this based, you know, upon what we've watched up to this point, this one's a little bit more unique, not great, a little bit more unique, and that at least they tried to freshen it up a little bit, right?
Yeah. At least it does. At least for Doug Bradley's last one, that it goes out with a little bit more of a, if not a bang, not a whimper.
Yeah.
Like the other ones. Thankfully it wasn't like one of the other ones, the CSI Hellraiser ones, you know?
Yeah.
He did liven it up a little bit, at least for his send off into the, you know, the final the final Hellraiser movie.
And now, of course, this one's written by a completely different person, although it's written by one of the dudes that wrote Hellraiser Hellseeker, which was part six. But part six, seven, and eight, Hellseeker, Deader, and now this one, Hellworld, were all directed by Rick Botta. So that's interesting that, at least from his perspective, that like, he was able to, maybe the last two weren't all that great, but like he was able to kind of redeem himself a little bit here with this one, I think, and also take things in a slightly different direction than he had the first two, you know, the last two that he had just directed, right?
But it also, I guess it just kind of goes to show you where they just had no idea what to do with the Hellraiser franchise anymore, like where to go with it or whatever. I mean, like I said, at least this one does liven it up a little bit from the last ones, but, you know, I guess there's only so much you can do with the concept of the Cenobites and Pinhead that then you just repeat yourself over and over and over again.
I mean, by 2005, they had long gone past the point of no return with this franchise, in my opinion. Like, the bloom was off the rose a long time ago. They needed to stop, you know? And honestly, let's be honest, like, they haven't freshened it up that much yet, so they probably just need to cool off for, you know, maybe they need to let it die for a while, and then, I don't know. Yeah. It's almost a little bit like, if you think about it, like the recent stuff we've got from Halloween, it was like we were kind of starving for it for a while there. And then we got that new trilogy and it's like, all right, that's enough. Just stop, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe, and I think we've mentioned this at some point too, maybe that's the blessing in disguise for Jason and Freddy, is that they haven't been beat to death over the last 10 or 15 years. Right. So like now you're kind of like, you know, I'd kind of like to see some Freddy or Jason. Whereas these other ones have kind of been, all right, you know, that's enough. We're tired of Chucky. We're tired of Michael Myers. We're tired of Pinhead, you know, and a few other things. We're tired of that shit. But we'd love to see some Freddy and Jason. So maybe that was the blessing in disguise for them, right?
Yeah. And if, you know, well, I know that they probably would have been beating Jason into the ground had they not had that over the rights and stuff. Yeah. So thankfully, you know, I'm not saying that we needed that because, I mean, it's put a lot of stuff on hold, but, you know, at least whenever they come to the table with a new Friday 13th movie, hopefully it'll be some, you know, a fresh take on it.
Yeah, I think we'll all appreciate it a little bit more, or at least and anticipate it a little bit more. Maybe too much, you know, at this point, but at least you'll be looking forward to it as opposed to dreading it, you know?
Yeah.
Until they make one sucky one, then we'll all be like, man, put him back in the fucking ground, you know?
Yeah. As much as I am a huge Texas Chainsaw fan, Leatherface fan, that it really pretty much just, you know, it doesn't extend to all of them by any means, because they beat that horse to the ground too. And I didn't, neither of us have seen the last, whatever they called it, the last Texas Chainsaw.
I think it was just called Texas Chainsaw or Texas, you know, I don't know. They're just some thousand variations of the fucking title. They take those three words and just fucking butcher them.
Yeah.
Texas Massacre, and Chainsaw Massacre, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Texas Chainsaw, Leatherface.
Next Generation with Captain Picard. I mean, it's almost like that franchise for me is kind of like the Hellraiser franchise. The first one was, well, I do like Texas Chainsaw better than Hellraiser. But, you know, the first one was great.
I got you.
Was also, some people could say it's really great, or it's at least really good, really enjoyable. And then the third one is like, it's okay. And then after that, it's all the other shit.
And what was the big driving force there? Wasn't there like 10 plus years between one and two?
Yeah, there was 10 years between.
So there you
first
go. It's like, let's just fucking cool our jets here. Don't make them one after another. And then you got something, you know, maybe that's what you should learn from this, movie companies. maybe wait 10 or 15 years until you have a good idea instead of just cranking them out, you know, one after another. True, yeah.
But, you know, we have come, like, not to get off on a tangent or anything, but we've come to the era of originality not being so important, I guess. It's kind of like they'd rather rest on the laurels and sell something or put something out there that they think or know will sell rather than take a chance on original material, unless it's something like A24 or somebody like that putting some stuff out, or the director of Hereditary, which slips my mind right now.
Or
Robert Eggers or somebody like that. Some, you know, pushing the envelope on originality when it comes to horror, or not even straightforward horror, just adding stuff in, elements into things that are, you know, not even really horror, but it's got horror elements in it or whatever. So I don't know. I just think that there's too much of the sequel. It's still the sequelitis and the remake and the rebranding or what, reimagining or whatever, you know. There's a lot of that still going on that not taking as many chances as they used to take in prior years, I guess.
And, you know, the funny thing is we're all kind of victims of doing this shit to ourselves, because, like, you see, even if you see an original horror movie, when you come out of that, you know, and this is just the nature of horror, I think. A lot of times there'll be something left at the end of a movie that's like, there's a hook to bring it back, right? Almost every horror movie, there's always something where, you know what? After you watch that movie, you're like, you know what? Maybe that, you know, fill in the blank could come back and there could be another one. And now we fell right back in the other fucking trap again. Here we go, you know?
Yeah.
We're all waiting for the next horror icon. And then when you get it, you're just like, I don't want this shit anymore. Where's all the original shit, you know? Well, I think we all do it in our own ways.
Yeah.
They got to feed the beast somehow. And why Hellraiser Hellworld was made to feed the beast, I don't know. Because I don't know what beast this is feeding. Other than Miramax or whoever it was to put this thing out, right? That's the only ones that you're feeding here. Ugh. But it was written by Carl Dupree, who, like I mentioned, had written Hellraiser Hellseeker, the sixth installment from 2002. So they love that one so much, they brought him back. But this one was straight to video. Like, we're in that thing now. Because I think the third one, if I'm not mistaken, was the last one that, like, actually got theatrically released. Even that newest one didn't get released in theaters, right? It went, like, straight to Hulu or something. So we've been spared from Pinhead in the theaters, I guess, you know. Although we're talking on this... We're talking all this trash, and Pinhead's going to email us again. You watch.
We've been spared from any more Pinhead in the video vortex, too, as we narrow those down to the more 80s and 90s videos.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we could have spun the wheel on that and ended up with doing Hellraiser Hellworld again.
God. Good God.
Or even worse, or, you know, maybe one of the other ones. I don't know. I haven't seen the one after that yet, but. The first non-Doug Bradley Pinhead, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that's coming. Like I said, we're going to get a little bit of a reprieve here because of the sucky summer, so it's going to have to wait until at least August or September before we get back on this franchise, and hopefully Will and or Donnie will be around to suffer along with us. Like I said, it is a twist of irony, though. Donnie's like, you know what, let's just get it over with. Let's watch another one, and then he's not here. So
yeah, you got to have Donnie on to get that such sweet suffering.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little less fun when you get to not hear his suffering. We want him to open up the limit configuration so we can laugh at him as he's getting pulled in with the change, you know? Not as fun.
He's a sweat. Yeah.
That's what this was missing. But it stars Stellan Urien as Adam. He's the guy that really the funny thing is, like, when you're looking at the cast and they name him all kind of towards the top, he's barely in this thing because he's the dude in the movie that commits suicide, you know, so he only comes back in flashbacks and shit, you know, so like he's got pretty top billing here. But then it's also got Catherine Winnick as Chelsea, Anna Tolput as Allison, Kerry Payton as Derek. Now, you may remember him. He came back years later in the Walking Dead series, and he played in a ton of episodes there. He was Ezekiel. He was in 83 episodes of The Walking Dead. So, and he's done a ton of other things, but that's probably what most people would recognize him for these days, other than Hellworld. Like we mentioned, Henry Cavill as Mike, and Christopher Jacot as Jake. And then, of course, Lance Henriksen as the host, and Doug Bradley for the last time as Pinhead. At least you get a couple of extra Cenobites in this one, right, too? Because, like, it seems like lately we've, we haven't had as many Cenobites running around in these movies, right?
Yeah. And these ones looked a lot better.
Yeah, they looked a lot better, although they're not as original as, say, those first two or three movies. But at least they looked halfway decent, like you said.
Was it just me, or did you notice Doug Bradley's makeup, too? It was, like, very yellowish, this movie, for some reason.
Yeah. You know, and the funny thing is, like, he hasn't done, I mean, think about this. This movie was filmed, like I said, late 2002, early 03. So at this point now, he hasn't played Pinhead in over 20 years at this point, right now as we speak. Which, you know, so like, it's probably better that obviously he did go away, because, you know, you could start to tell his age, I think, by this.
Yeah.
I mean, but what are we from the first one now? Even with this, right? The first one came out in 1987, so now you're, what, 15 years of him playing Pinhead, roughly, a little bit more?
Yeah,
about 17 years by this point he had played Pinhead, so I guess maybe that's part of, like, you know, he's starting to show his age a little bit. I don't know. Either it's just crappy makeup. It's one or the other.
Why fuss and fret about dinner? Why not have it right here? Yes, this drive-in offers everyone in the family a real picnic treat for dinner. We've got delicious sandwiches with all the trimmings and your other dinner favorites, plus whatever you want to drink, hot or cold. Come early before the show starts, or eat while you're being entertained, or at intermission time. So why fuss? Give your family a tasty dinner at this drive-in.
For you, the listeners of the All-American Spook Show podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. So I went on over to audible.com, and I typed in Clive Barker just to see some of the works that he has over there. And we've mentioned this a couple of times when we do these Hellraiser episodes, but you've got The Scarlet Gospels by Clive Barker. That one is a little over 11 hours long there. You've got Weave World by Clive Barker, and that's a Audible exclusive. That one's well over 21 hours long. And then one that's even longer, Great and Secret Show by Clive Barker, and that is the Book of the Art, Book 1. And that one's almost 22 and a half hours long, and that's another Audible exclusive. There's a few Audible exclusives here from Clive Barker. So obviously, if you're listening to this, you're a fan of Hellraiser and Clive Barker and everything. So he's got tons of works available to you on Audible. So if you want to listen to those, go check those out by going to audibletrial.com/spookshow. Again, that's audibletrial.com/spookshow for your free audiobook. So I'm going to hop back over to imdb.com, and I'm going to click on plot summary of Hell World to see what pops up. All right, we've only got two, the brief one and then a little bit longer one. Gamers playing a MMORPG based on the Hellraiser films find their lives endangered after being invited to a rave, the host of which intends to show them the truth behind the Cenobite mythos. Now, before I read this longer one, that one basically says it right there that it's a game based on the Hellraiser movie. So are we to believe, just based on that sentence, that in this world of this movie, that, like, there have been Hellraiser movies and now they've made a game of the movies, and that's what these people get sucked into?
Earlier. I thought they meant, I don't know, I don't know for sure if he mentioned movie or whatever, but I want to say they did talk about something about the movie characters or this or that.
Yeah, like, you know, I said, they were throwing out, when you're watching it, they're throwing out terms like Leviathan and where's the gatekeeper or whatever the hell they said, you know. I'm blanking on some of the terms that they threw out there, but it's like, you're in a world here that either, like you said, like I said, either the movies exist and they're fans of the movies, so they made a game, or the books exist and they're popular and they've made a game, right? So one of these things have happened in this movie, right, I think?
Yeah, and it's only in this movie, because I don't remember that being a thing, that sort of meta aspect being a part of any of the other movies.
No. I mean, in those, it's just like somebody fucked up and opened that box like usual, and, you know, now you're kind of watching them go through the hell that they have unleashed. That's usually these movies are, right?
Very select few that know anything about them. Basically, ones who've opened the configuration box, right? That's it. It's not like a movie or game or book franchise. I think that's just part of that. I can't remember what year it was. 2002. So was there? Scream had come out before,
yes, right? Scream has already been out. Yeah,
going on. I think. Yeah. So that's probably just one of the things that was kind of hot. So hey, let's put this in the storyline for Hellraiser.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like there was a few things in this movie that was taken from other horror movies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, like just the formula of it, that slasher-esque type of '90s, early 2000s feel to this movie with the way it plays out and everything, and the music and the feel of it, you know, it feels like something which isn't a problem of the time, but it feels like so many these type of movies that you've seen before, to your point. So yeah, they're definitely gacking some ideas and concepts here for sure. Here's the longer one though, and this was contributed by Claudio Carvalho from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. We've read plenty of his submissions there on IMDb. The youngsters Chelsea, Allison, Derek, and Mike are grieving the suicide of their friend Adam, who became obsessed with an internet game called Hellworld. Their former friend Jake blames the group, since they have not stopped playing the game even when Adam was unstable. When they receive an invitation to a Hellworld party in an isolated mansion, the reluctant Chelsea decides to join the group, and they surprisingly find Jake in the party. He explains that he was invited by a girl he met in a chat room. They are hosted by the owner of the place, who shows them his private macabre collection. Along the night, they find that they are in a party in hell. I guess that's about as apt a description you get of this movie, is essentially like they're all at a party because they're all big fans of this Hellworld game, and things go haywire, right? That's the simplest description of this movie.
Yep.
I got to say, though, like the little bit, you would think, like, if you're going to base this movie on the fact that there's this game that everybody loves playing, wouldn't you take some time to make the game look worth a shit? the little bit of the game that they show is just like some internet web game where it's like you just try to figure out the puzzle box. That's all they show you.
This is a horrible game. Riveting game, I don't think.
You'd at least try to fake one of those massive online player, role playing game kind of, which is what it's supposed to be. Try to fake it in some way, animated. I don't know, but like. This is like a horrible, it looks like an old late 90s website that you would go to, and there's a splash page of there's a cube, and then you got to do some stuff on the screen to unlock the cube, and then, hey, you're in. That's it. I love the exclusive invite too. That's what it is. Like, how do I get this invitation to Hellworld, this party? Oh, you gotta unlock the box on the screen. Okay. let me get my invitation. And they quickly do it. And then how do you, you would think there'd be some more exclusive way to do this other than just print it out. That's all they had to do. Why did they have to solve it again? Why not just print a couple copies of it and start handing it out to people? And it's not like there was some level of security once they got there. Like, they all get there and they're like, hell yeah. And then, like, you got your invitations and they all just show a sheet of paper. Like, what the fuck? And when they get there, this generic ass rave. Smoke, I know you've been tons of raves. Have you ever went to any like that?
Not.
Anywhere there's white.
Like a house party.
Yeah, it's like a house, like a
college party.
Yeah, a frat house party with some electronic music.
Yeah, with white masks that have numbers on them, and they all have corresponding cell phones. Nokia cell phones.
Yeah. There's a spotlight there. Is how many raves have there been in horror movies? There was like Freddy versus Jason had one in the cornfield, right?
Yeah. Especially in this type of movie, right? There's always a big party, a rave, a frat party. There's something that leads to chaos.
Yeah, it becomes like a what do you call it? Like a
MacGuffin?
Name is to long.
But it takes a little bit, because I think you're like a solid like 20, 30 minutes or so into the movie until you finally get some action. And one of the girls, Allison, she sits down in this chair, gets strapped in, and then these blades come toward her face and then just, I guess, catch her in the throat and bleed her out, right? So this is your first big moment of gore, right?
That reminds you of?
It reminds me of Saul, which, think of the timing of this now. This was filmed in 2002-2003, written probably around the same time, obviously before that, so probably written around 2001, 2002. Saw came out in 2004, I think, the first Saw movie. So the release of this actually came out after the first one or two Saw movies, give or take. I don't have all the dates in front of me, but this was written and done well before the first Saw. So it's the chicken or the egg, which one came first? Do we dare live in a world where James Wan and all of them copied Hell World to make Saw? is this possible?
Well, that and the fact that James Wan himself was influenced by like giallo films.
Yeah,
so it's like giallo Hellraiser made Saw.
And it's not like this is some groundbreaking storytelling devices and stuff, but It is. It might be a little fishy to those who, you know, want to dwell on such things that, like, yeah, you never know. It's close enough, right?
Yep.
I seriously doubt it, but hey, you never know. But at least you get a little bit of, at least we finally get some action and get some gore going here with this one. So I thought it was pretty well done. And what do you think as far as, like, in this movie, the use of, clearly there was some CGI type stuff going on, but I think there were some fairly decent practical effects going on in this one too, right?
Yeah. There were definitely, well, we haven't got to the part yet, but the most glaringly bad, I guess, CGI, at least for the time, or maybe for the budget and the time period, was just because we're talking about the CGI, I'll jump to the end, and also that, of course, everybody mm-hmm. knows we're a spoiler film podcast and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
But Lance Henriksen's demise. You know, where
it took me a second there because I was thinking, like, wait a minute, didn't it end at the graveyard? But no, that, I forgot there was a little bit at the end there.
His because he got bisected, right?
Yeah,
so we're cutting it. Just really bad CG of his insides or whatever.
You know, that's like, a
practical effect. I mean, it would have been much better. But
if you think about it too, wasn't that a thing around that time because of the Final Destination movies and shit, where somebody would get cut in half or their head would get chopped away, and then they just kind of stand there like, oh, and then their head would slide off.
Yeah, that definitely was a thing. Although I have to say, though, the movie, even though this movie is not the greatest movie, it does have a great opening scene that sort of plays on that bisecting of body parts in some way. It was Ghost Ship. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah. With the that chain or rope or whatever that was.
That was cool. Like, what probably the coolest thing about that movie. I mean, it's not, you know, down the road, but it's not the worst movie out there or whatever.
Well, I'll tell you this. I haven't watched that movie in a long time, but my memory of it is probably better than the reality of it. I'll say that for now. But I only say that because it's been so long since I've seen it. But I guess we'll find out sooner or later.
But yeah, I think that was definitely a thing, that the whole, the bisecting also, and the CG aspect of it. Do it in CG, make it like, you know, somebody got, whether they get cut in multiple pieces or just cut in half some way and then slide slowly apart. And then you see the CG insides just terrible.
It's always so bad, but it's that Looney Tunes cartoon bullshit where, like, they run out on a cliff and then stand in the air like, when they look down and realize they're standing in air and then fall. It's like that, except cut in half.
I don't know why it became a thing, but it did for a little while there.
It's like, hey, we can do this in CGI. This will look cool. And then it looks like ass. And then it didn't look good at the time, and it did not age well. Right?
Yeah, agree. I didn't like it at the time either. Every time I saw that, outside of the Ghost Ship, but that's a little bit different with Ghost Ship. I think I'm pretty sure they used mostly practical effects for the aftermath of the cable, the line,
besides that one has a way bigger budget and, you know, some creativity behind it as opposed to this, obviously. But how about one of your favorite scenes, Smoke? I'm sure the blowjob mask demon face. Henry Cavill's character is just straight up, you know, just like, well, we're watching him get a blowjob.
I was like, what the?
That was hilarious. Just first of all, just that scene itself was pretty funny, but you know, knowing Cavill now versus makes it even funnier.
I'm surprised. I'm surprised there's not like some memes and shit of, like, you know, when Superman was and he was playing Superman and shit, of like bringing this movie back, you know, out of the dustbin.
And then what was that one-liner thing he said while that was going on? He said something about, because it was a girlfriend on the other line that kind of, oh, this was it. It just came to mind that blew him off. He said that. He says, you shouldn't have blown me off, I guess, then, or something like that, as he's getting blown,
I love the mask, though, when he's just like, yeah, that's right. And she's, you know, she's giving him a BJ, and then the CGI, that crappy CGI, right? It just turns into like a, for a brief second there, it almost looks like the mask from Demons.
Oh, yeah.
Except animated and shitty, but, you know, like for a brief second, and he's just like, bah! You know, but then he's like, fuck it, just keep going, you know. I don't know, man. I might have to take off running if I see the fucking mask turn into a demon, but whatever. Then a little bit after that, Pinhead, well, I guess, you know, you find out later on whether, you know, what the hell's going on here, but Pinhead decapitates Derek. He's the guy chasing around the he's an asthmatic or whatever, so he's got the breathing gimmick. You know, yeah. I'm blanking what they call those things. He's chasing around.
Yeah. And, the inhaler?
Yeah, inhaler. That's it. And he's laying on a table like, oh, thank God I got my inhaler. And then Pinhead just comes along with like, what is that? Like a fucking mortician's axe, cleaver? What, I don't even know what the hell that thing, what you'd call it. And cuts his head clean off. So at least you get another decent kill here, right? You know, you're stacking them up now at this point.
Well, yeah, at least they upped the gore ante of this a little bit. Even if some of it was CG.
Now, I guess some of this is explained a little bit more later in the movie, but what did you think of that scene where Chelsea calls the cops and she's in the upstairs window and the cops can't see her? Or is it explained? I don't know. I'm just thinking about it again. Like, hold on. Now, maybe we need to just explain the way this movie ends so we can go back and maybe make sense of some of this shit. The way this movie ends is essentially all these people, the guy that's the host, right? Because they never name him. I think even in the credits, he's just credited as host. Lance Henriksen, his character. He invites all these people. I guess he's the one that got this Hell World party together. Invites them all. And essentially, it turns out he's getting revenge because his son was Adam, their friend, who committed suicide playing the game because I guess he feels they didn't help him. So he calls them all. He gathers them together and then, like, drugs them. And then buries them alive in like shallow graves, but they all have like a pipe in there so they can still breathe. So he's kind of letting the drugs take their, you know, minds, I guess, right? Like he wants them to suffer slowly in these graves that he has dug for them. So really in the end, it turns out most of this movie is horseshit. It's just a hallucination, right? And they're also in these graves with little Nokia cell phones, right? Little Motorola numbers. And they, I guess this is how he's able to talk to them. And I guess they can try to dial out and shit like that. So I guess maybe that's what the cop thing is that Chelsea's in the grave and calls.
And she thinks that she's seeing them from the window, but she's really not even in the house. She's in the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, boy, these are some powerful drugs, huh?
Now that aspect of the rave scene might be accurate.
True, except for the burying them alive with a pipe in the ground aspect of it. But yeah, the crazy hallucinations. Yeah. Like I said, I don't know if the explanation of the end makes it make any more sense, but like, because now when you work back to what we're talking about here, it's like she calls the cops. She thinks she's in the window, like the second story window of this place. So he's beating on the window and then they're just looking up like, I don't see anybody. So this must be clearly it's just more shit. She is seeing under the influence of drugs in the grave, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I take it.
Then you get the next big kill of Mike. This is Henry Cavill's character getting meat hooked by the Cenobite. And by the way, they mailed that one in a mile away, right? Because it was the scene beforehand where he takes them down in this dungeon where there's all these, you know, like fucking mummified babies and body parts and shit in jars and stuff. And like, there's a meat hook hanging off the ceiling and he touches it and he says, you shouldn't touch that. You know, bodies have, you know, been on that or whatever the fuck he says. So that's like movie 101. Yeah. Like, just remember that. Just remember. So I guess in his little nightmare hallucination, he gets meat hooked and strung up and killed there. Still makes for a decent little gory scene there. Pinhead, a little bit later on when I guess another cop is out. When Chelsea gets loose and she's running through the woods and another cop shows up, I'll help. And then he's on the phone and then just gets spiked right through the back of the neck. Through the mouth.
Through the mouth. Was it into the phone too?
I just remember it coming out of his mouth. I don't remember whether it went through the phone or not, but either way, it was still a pretty cool little effect, right?
Yeah.
Although now that what I've explained the end of the movie, now you realize all this is pretty much horseshit. And I assume that's the other thing too. Like they don't, okay. We understand by the end that this is like a mass hallucination type of thing. But what really happened and what didn't? I mean, because I think you assumed that everything that happened to the main characters did not happen, right? Because they explained that. Like, well, this motherfucker thought he got his head chopped off, but in reality, he just died from an asthma attack. And Henry Cavill's character literally died of fright in the grave. And the other chick died. She didn't die with the chair with the saw on her throat. She died clawing her own... like at her own throat or something, right? So she bled out. But what about the cops and other people, the ancillary characters that died? They didn't explain that. So, like, how were those hallucinations, or did they really have? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or was there just no cops there either at all?
Yeah.
Hallucinations.
Right. I think it's that way. And then, you know, at the end, when Lance Hendrickson has the box, well, yeah, he gets it.
That might be, you know, other than the reveal of these people are buried and then this is really what happened to them. Jake and Chelsea survive it, right? But I think the only real thing you imagine happens here is what happens to him when, what's this fucking box, right? this is all bullshit, right? And then fucking, you know, of course, does the puzzle box, and then here comes Pinhead and a couple Cenobites, and then they, as per mentioned earlier, he gets lopped in half with a chain blade. Just cuts him, slices him four or five ways to Sunday.
So I think basically then you could say that it pretty much is like the other Hellraiser movies in that, yeah, in this world there is a game or maybe movies or books or whatever. There's a franchise, I guess, of some sort around the Hellraiser world. But, you know, it was a hallucination, so the Cenobites weren't real to them, but they were real in the limit configuration like they always have been in the other movies. It's just that Hendrickson's the only one that opened it and the only one that actually saw the Cenobites in this movie, right?
Yeah, so really, in reality, like, this whole movie is not necessarily horseshit. Something really happened. It's just what you're seeing isn't exactly what's happening. So it's not horseshit on the level of April Fool's Day, but, but it's still a lot of, you know, hallucinogenic what the fuck is going on until you get to the end where they bring the supernatural back into it. So all these hallucinations, they think they're seeing Pinhead where he would appear or reappear and all this. None of that's really happening, but that shit at the end.
What makes me wonder too, did Adam really kill himself or did he have the box and Pinhead got him too?
Yeah. So maybe Pinhead really got him and
not this game.
Yeah, not just some shit. He's wrapped up in the game and kills himself. But although they show what happens to him, right, where he's down in a basement or something, digging a hole back and forth, and then eventually he just douses himself in gas and lights himself on fire, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's some weird jumping around, and it's definitely not a perfect movie, but they make it make about as much sense as it's going to make, I guess. They do a lot better of explaining shit in this one than they have in the last few movies. I'll give them that. But it's still far from perfect.
They found a way to make it meta horror, but also have it be traditional supernatural, you know, in the end. Like I said, most of these movies that are the meta things are, it's that way, like Scream. It's no, you know, there's no supernatural kill. It's one of them, right? Or whatever. There's no other there. There's no, you know.
Yeah.
The meta horror are a wink and a nod at the person watching the movie or whatever. This one, it's kind of like you get that and you think that's what it's going to be, but then in the end, no, the Cenobites have always been there like they always have been. It's just the right kind of person opening the box that finds them. But, you know, but like you said, the rest of the movie is kind of horseshit before that because they're just hallucinating, thinking they're seeing the Cenobites. So, in a way, they try to have their cake and eat it too with the, you know, touching on the meta horror stuff, but still having it be the traditional, you know, supernatural Cenobites.
But I do believe that in the end, even though, like, you know, you're kind of watching just a mass hallucination type of thing, the true end of these people is just as much, if not more, fucked up than the Pinhead version of them dying, right? Like, they really died in some fucked up ways, buried in a shallow grave.
Yeah.
It's interesting. More interesting than the last few movies, so I'll give them that.
But another movie that came to mind, too, now that we've been talking about it, you know, and The Host and him bringing them together, and the invitation and all that, it's like, it's a, you know, The House on Hellraiser Hill or something.
Yeah.
House on Haunted Hill vibes with him being like, you know, the host or whatever.
So you're getting a lot of William Castle vibes here is what you're saying.
Yeah.
I guess for now we'll leave it there. Donnie's, you know, he's the one that nominated it. He's not here and he didn't leave me a star rating. So I have no idea what his thoughts or feelings are on it, but I guess I'll get started. I mean, like I've said a handful of times here, like, look, the bar has been set pretty low, but I think this one is far more watchable than, like, say, at least since like part 3 or 4, for sure. It's been a while since we've seen a tolerable, watchable Hellraiser. So it's kind of caught me by surprise in that manner. So, far from perfect. A lot of stuff doesn't make sense, but that's kind of Hellraiser for you, right? Like, it's not always going to make sense. Go all the way back to the first one. We still had questions. Like, what the fuck, you know, it was solid, but what the fuck is going on here? You know, so like, it's always one of those series that's like that. But I found plenty to enjoy here. There's some fun to be had. It definitely feels like, it feels like the last pieces of the 90s or something. It's like the 90s had its death rattle or something here in 2005 with this movie. All right, so I guess with, you know, just thinking about, like, weighing the scale of what I've done with the previous seven installments, and that this is nowhere near, for me, the first three movies. So I kind of go back to maybe it's somewhere around what the fourth one got. So, what? And even that, man, we hated that one. I mean, that was Bloodline, I think, that right, that was the one that sucked. Man, this is tough. Yes.
It is, and I think mine's going to be is probably the same sort of toughness you're having is over the ratings between what we gave Hellraiser 3 versus what we gave the 1-2 right after that.
Yeah.
Because I really like Hellraiser 3 more than this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But also quite a bit more than those two that came after Hellraiser 3.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, and this is an indictment on, say, 2 and 3, but because I gave 3, Smoke, you and I both gave 3, Hellraiser 3, way back in episode 109, 2.25 stars. So I'm not going to go that high. I'm going to go slightly below that, and I'm going to give this 1.75. And that puts it well above all the rest that we've watched since 3, in my view. Because all those were like 1s, 1.5s, and 1.25s and stuff like that, you know, that we've watched since then. So this is better than that, but it ain't quite on the level of Hellraiser 3 either. And boy, that's a low bar. It really is, because I like Hellraiser 3, but it's not the greatest movie in the world, right? So that should tell you what the bar is for these Hellraiser movies for me. So yeah, I'll go 1.75 is what I'm going to say. So Smoke, what do you say?
As we were just talking about just right there, I was going over it in my head the same way. You know, it's like Hellraiser 3, again, not a masterpiece. Initially, those were the only three Hellraiser movies I had ever seen. And I was fine just stopping there until the podcast came along. And then we had to watch these other ones. And now I realize there was a reason why I had stopped at 3. So yeah, I definitely, and like I said, that's not any masterpiece. It's like at the time I thought this movie kind of sucks. You know, I mean, it's not the worst ever, but it kind of sucks. Yeah. And then you watch the other ones and you realize how much better part 3 was than those, you know, than the ones that came after it, right? So yeah, I definitely put this one below Hellraiser 3 and above any of the other ones that came after Hellraiser 3 that we've done so far. And so I'm laying right in there where you are, 1.75.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, I think it's fair. So Tiana, what do you say about it?
I give it, I guess, a 2.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't argue it. I mean, and I really thought about giving it a 2, but I was like, you know, that puts it too close to Hellraiser 3 for me, so I couldn't do it. But
I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Because we gave it 2.25, right? Hellraiser 3?
Yeah.
See, yeah. If I did Hellraiser 3 with you guys, I would have given it
a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah. And I probably wouldn't argue with you too much, but I could see, you know, especially knowing what was coming after it. Yeah. Like, if you could go back and, if only we could go back that far and fix things, right? Just to balance the scales. But no, that's probably about right. The only one that you've done with us, Tiana, was Hellraiser Deader back in episode 198, and you gave that 1. So clearly it's better than that, right?
Yeah. I think Lance Henriksen and the gore kicked it up a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, you still get a lot of the what the fuck is going on here, but it's not as confusing as some of the other ones we've watched. So at least that makes it more enjoyable, more palatable to me. So, all right, so like we mentioned, Donnie's not here to give his connections from the crypt, but...
I came up with 5.
Yeah, and if you think about it, like, there's a lot of gore in this movie, but it's not a high body count type of movie. I mean, what you see, it's pretty good, but it's not like a bunch, right?
Because it really doesn't, like, nobody really gets killed for a while.
Yeah, and it takes a while for you. I mean, you see these people die, but it's like 3 people, and then that cop. Right. And then eventually they turn back around. Like, oh, yeah. By the way, all these things that you've seen, that was horseshit. Here's how they really died. You know, and then Lance Henriksen at the end with the choppy choppy. Right.
Yeah.
So that's about right with 5. So that naturally leads us to.
Let's talk about the kill reel.
I like kill.
Oh, boy. I guess, you know, even though it's kind of cheap-ass looking because of the CGI aspect of it, I guess, like, one of the better, more satisfying ones is the one right at the end where Lance Hendrickson gets it, yep. You know, via Pinhead, you know. Because, like, we've talked about a number of times now, like, all the rest really didn't happen quite that way. So you're kind of like, all right, well, that was, all of them were kind of cool looking, but they didn't really happen that way. So I think this one was the only one at the end of the movie you take away saying this actually happened. That's, he calls Pinhead in, and the Cenobite comes over there with, like, a damn axe blade on a chain and just cuts him in many pieces. So I guess that's the highlight kill. So that will naturally lead us to
Gore Score.
All right, so Smoke, what do you got for the old beautiful Gore Score there?
Yeah, this one is at least equal with the last one we did, and gorier than some of the prior ones that came after Hellraiser 3. So I think I'm going to go for a 7 on this one. So that's kind of equal to the last one and to Hellraiser 3, which I think is fair to this movie. It's definitely more gore in it than, and forgive me because these things meld together and I don't remember the names of the ones that came after the you know, Hellraiser 4, even though it wasn't called Hellraiser
4. Well, I'll fill you in. It was Hellraiser shit, Hellraiser shittier, Hellraiser shittiest.
Yes. So this is at least gorier than those Hellraiser shittier and shittiest.
Yeah. There's plenty of gore to be had here, but it's not like wall to wall. So
yeah. And we mentioned the juicier bits in your kill count was, even though it was CG, it was a satisfying kill, even if the CG was, you know, just one of those, the bisecting CG things that were going around, as we talked about earlier in the show.
Yeah.
And meat hooks and spikes going through people and a decapitation. And so, yeah, you get more gore in this one than some of those other ones. And thankfully, the storyline, as we, you know, as our ratings show, was a little bit better than some of the prior ones. And, you know, if nothing else, unfortunately, this is the last one that Doug Bradley's going to be in. And yeah. He was the best thing about some of those sequels that came after Hellraiser 3. You know, it's too bad that he had the scripts for the movies weren't up to par, but at least you had him in there as Hellraiser.
How many times has that mistake been made?
True. So there was that. That's about the best thing you can say about some of those. Again, Hellraiser shittier and shittiest ones came after.
It's unfortunate because it's like, it's the best thing about this and the worst thing about this. The best thing is like, well, it's Doug Bradley, you know, it's Pinhead. It just sucks us the last time. So bittersweet. So I guess we'll find out probably later on this year once we get back on the series after the sucky summer. What does it hold in store when we reopen the limit configuration once again? I'm sure we all wait with bated breath for the 9th. Fucking movie in this series.
Except you haven't seen it, so because you haven't seen it yet.
No,
either,
I haven't. No, I haven't. No, I mean, like I said many of these ago, like I had only seen the first three, maybe four. And then after that, I was out. So this is all new territory. Well, other than that newest one, I did watch that one.
Okay. Let's just say if we could give a 0. Yeah.
Well, don't oversell it or anything. We'll find out. Yikes. All right, well, that's enough. So next week, we're going to be celebrating Mother's Day. The best way we could figure out, I'm not going to say necessarily it's a great way. It's just the best way we could figure out. We're going to just be talking about mothers and Mother's Day and just mothers in general in horror. So it could be an interesting Spook Show Spotlight episode next week. And then we'll be getting back on the old movie train there. And then before you know it, the sucky summer will begin. So for Will and Donnie, who couldn't be with us, Tiana, Professor Smoke, I'm Josh. We are the All-American Spook Show, and we'll talk to you next week.
Please replace the speaker on its rack when you're ready to leave. Failure to do so will damage both the speaker and your car. We'll be grateful, and so will the patrons who follow you.